When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Because I know, and I've done enough research to know, that I'm very lucky at my age to even be able to invest anything because of compound interest. Like, I understand how valuable it
is. It's huge.
A lot of people my age absolutely do not.
Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Rich. I am your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a Certified Financial Planner. And I am here with my guest today, Cameron. Hi, Cameron.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm very excited to be on this podcast.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, age, location, job?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm 23 years old. I'm located in Greenville, South Carolina, and I am an aircraft maintainer. So that's a pretty unique field. A lot of people are like, oh,
yeah.
I didn't even think about that being
what
a job.
It?
Yeah. So I basically do, you know, what you take your car to the auto shop to get wrenches turned and have things fixed. So I basically do that for airplanes. I work at a charter company. And we are also a certified repair station for Diamond aircrafts. And we basically, I fix everything from 4-seater planes to like 10 to 12-seater planes. So it's a pretty interesting job. A lot of variants. I get to practice a lot of critical thinking skills. So I enjoy that part of my job for sure.
How did you end up in that? Because you didn't, you know, I think one of the interesting things about the podcast is you hear about all different career paths.
Yeah.
So this is definitely a unique one.
Yeah. So I actually, I was a very like, you know, high achieving student in school. I actually was slated to and did attend the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs for about 2 years.
Okay.
And I was there unfortunately during COVID. And so everything just was really hard to deal with. I mean, we were locked down to the base for weeks at a time. We didn't know if we were going to get to go home for Thanksgiving, Christmas, like all of those things. So I think mentally it was just really hard to go through. But I also was unsure about wanting to commit, you know, like 9 years, basically my whole 20s to the military. And I think a lot of people, I mean, I think you've spoken about this before on your podcast, but people will literally have to make these huge decisions at 18 years old and not think about the ramifications in the long term. And so I just decided before the commitment. Yeah.
Yeah, the military academies, I think there's a misnomer that people think they're free if you get in, and they're not. You pay with time.
No. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, you see those estimates and it's like, oh, if you take advantage of travel abroad and all that stuff, it's up to $500,000 scholarship and all this, that, and the other. And it's true. I mean, it wasn't an easy feat to get in. And so the first question people ask me when, you know, I tell them I went to that school and didn't finish, like, oh, do you regret it? I'm like, no. I met so many people. Like, I literally have one of the colonels who helped develop the F-16's phone number in my back pocket. You know, like, it was an experience that I am thankful I had, and it'll always be on my resume. And people look at that and they're like, oh, that means you worked hard and you wanted to be there, because you don't just casually get into a military academy. I'll tell you that.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
I dated a West Point cadet and then, you know, in the military for a number of years, most of my 20s. So it is not easy to get into an academy. takes a lot of work, and you have to do a lot of the work much younger. Like you're prepping to get, you're prepping to get in much younger than getting in at 18.
I mean, before I even knew about the military academies in eighth grade, I was wanting to go to Stanford, you know? So that's usually the level of students that these academies are accepting, if it's not from some sort of enlisted bridge or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very difficult on all capacities, right? You have to have the service requirement. You need usually a congressional nomination. You have to have the academics, the athletic ability. So that's incredibly impressive. But I can't imagine it's hard enough without having the COVID wrench thrown in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that was hard. They sent us home for about, you know, like 3 months. And so getting that taste of the outside world again, it was
hard
so...
to go back.
Yes. Very much so. Mm-hmm.
And then how does it work though? Because do you owe back? Do they bill you for the 2 years? Okay.
So I will say this. You should not go in with this mindset of like, OMG, I can come out of this with a laptop and, you know, 2 years of credits for school. Like that's what I came out with, luckily, and at no cost, you know, like I had to pay back, I think, some tax things that they withheld wrong. And that was like a couple $100s. But other than that, I pretty much got out with no added expense. And I was able to bridge pretty easily to, you know, like an associate degree and have all of my gen eds covered. So that was a pretty nice perk.
Mm-hmm. And then so you switch from the academy into traditional undergraduate program.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was going to take like a year long break. I was like, I need to step back and look at things. You know, I've been through a lot in the past 2 years. And so I came back to Columbia, South Carolina, where my parents live. And I was not excited to be back in the South. That is for sure. I am not a huge fan, but I think over the past few years, I've definitely come to love the quirks that are lovable, of course. I decided I was between two schools, Greenville Technical College and Trident Technical College. One was in the upstate, one was low country. So I was like, all right, beach or mountains? And I had mountains for the past 2 years. So I decided to go beach. So I went to Trident Technical College and they have a great aeronautical training center that's like hundreds of thousands of square feet. All of my school is paid for by state grants. And I basically got paid to go to school. Yeah, it was pretty incredible.
That's amazing. Okay, so then with that training, then the job path, if you're doing aeronautical, right, then you go into
this
is one of the options.
I mean, I went in knowing I wanted to do aircraft maintenance. So since I left the Air Force Academy, I had a plan to pursue that. I was not leaving that spot knowing what I had there in terms of career progression that I could have had if I'd stayed without a plan. I've always been a planner and I was not going to just be like emotional about it and completely just dismiss any logistics that I would need to think through.
Perfect. Okay. So then how long, so you're 23. So did you graduate last year?
Yeah. So recently? I graduated August of last year. It was, I had to separate, I think mentally, the fact that most of my friends were graduating a bachelor's when I was graduating an associate's. So, you know, that I think was kind of hard to deal with because, like I said, I was always a high achieving student. I had really big goals. Like I thought I was going to go straight to a 4-year. And so I had to just kind of compartmentalize all these different feelings I was having and realizing that they were valid, but they didn't have to define who I was.
No, definitely not. What do you make in your role?
So fresh out of school, I make $60,000, and that is in general aviation, which is the charter side of things, flight schools, like all those sorts of smaller operations that you're going to see more at regional airports rather than like international. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And then, so you have no student loan debt then?
So I do have a few thousand because living expenses, my parents didn't help me
Got
with
it.
School.
Okay.
Charleston, South Carolina is getting more and more and more expensive. I started basically living downtown and just moved further out to Goose Creek because I basically had to, you know, choose housing situations as they arose. When one ended, I had to quickly choose another. So yeah, I took out a few thousand. And the few thousand I actually took out, it wasn't mostly for living expenses. I actually used student loans to refinance some of my credit card debt. Which I know a lot of people have mixed opinions about, but you know, I got 29% APR down to 5 to 6%. And I was like, see, my dad even, you know, he's very logical. He was like, yeah, that kind of seems like a no-brainer.
Perfect. So, so that doesn't seem very, so $2,000 or $3,000.
So, here, I actually have a budget and fact sheet pulled up.
Perfect. We love a good spreadsheet. Yeah.
Yes, I love a good spreadsheet. That is something my dad showed me a couple of years ago and I've adopted ever since. But yeah, so I have a student, a federal student loan right now, that is at $4,302. So right now I'm making the minimum payment 50 because I have some other debt that I'm paying off, but between some credit cards and my car payment, I have about $6,500 more in debt. So I'm sitting at about $10,740 right now for debt. And it was $14,000 a couple months ago. So I've been really, really working to pay it down. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And then what are your living costs down in South Carolina? Like, what are your expenses run?
Yeah. So I actually, the way that I work my budget out, I basically take my total paycheck and I do a percentage of everything and kind of delegate it to different things. So I live with my partner and our dog, Sammy. And I'm in the Traveler's Rest area, which is a little bit more of a cost. We live in about an 800 square foot duplex. It, you know, with two people and a dog, it does what it needs to do. So joint bills right now, I'm sitting at about $1,115. So that's about 31% of my paycheck. I'm bringing home about $3,598 every month. And that is after 4% in my 401k, about $225 to health and dental insurance, and then probably about anywhere from $900 to $1,000 in taxes every month.
Yeah, we don't want to forget about the tax man.
No, absolutely not. So I'm salary, so it's pretty easy. Yeah, because it's about $5,000 a month is what my pre-tax and pre-401k all of that pay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And do you get a match on your 401k?
I do. So I believe, so I put in, I'm working with the numbers here, but I know they go percentage. I put in about $200 a month and they match $175. Okay. Yeah. So my...
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. My 401k account, I have a John Hancock account. I'm not a huge fan just because the fund diversity isn't great, but I'm 100% in like a S&P 500 stock index fund because I'm like, I'm young. I know how to detach my emotions, so I'm going to go 100%. So that's sitting at about $4,000 right now because I started in September of last year.
Great. That's fantastic. Yeah. And I agree. I think while you're young is the opportunity to be aggressive if you can stomach it, which kind of setting it up and forgetting about it is a great way to not get nervous. Is just to
100%.
Set it up and then don't look at it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you've the 401k. Okay, and then the living expenses that come out to be $1,115. That's your share of everything?
So that is my joint bills. That includes utilities, groceries. Okay. We have like a replenishment fund. We really try to like think of everything that we'd need. We buy like our dog's food in bulk. And so we'll put away like a, you know, $40 a month total towards that. And that usually covers it. And then I can kind of go down my other categories that I have pulled from that total paycheck. So I've kind of been playing around with how much debt, you know, I pay off to feel comfortable, but still feel aggressive. Cause that's a fine line. I feel like, cause you know, I'm young. I want to go out some nights and have some fun, you know, like it's, I don't go out often. I don't eat out often. Like I'm my partner and I, she is very, very financially responsible. And so I'm lucky because anytime I get impulsive, she's like, okay, well, we just spent a lot of money on this trip. We should probably eat at home for the next 2 weeks. And I'm like, true. Okay.
And what does your partner do?
So she is actually a, I always mess this up. She's basically a resource project coordinator for in Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah. And so she went to school for English. She thought she was going to be a teacher. We actually moved to Greenville for that reason. She was going to do the Masters of Teaching at Furman University, if you've ever heard of it. And she was like, absolutely not. I can't do it. And I don't blame her. It's a rough, I have friends who are teachers and I respect them madly, but it is a tough environment to be in right now. And so she, yeah, so combined, we're bringing home about 100K before taxes, which in that's this fantastic. Area, I mean, it's great. A lot. Because, yeah, I mean, and we know we're probably only going up from here. So it's pretty nice right out of school for both of us to have started at that mm-hmm. level, because I have so many friends who are stuck in food and bev who are like, I can't get a job. I don't know what I want to do. You know, it's the Gen Z moment is definitely it's a time, and I deal with a lot of people at work who are constantly telling me, oh, you young people don't want to work. I'm like, I'm here, I show up on time every day and I'm working. That, right. What do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? So I feel some type of way about those things.
No, but I think as a joint in, like, for a joint household for your ages, right, to be coming out of school, it's a great income, especially with cost of living, right? So, absolutely. And you're splitting everything, you said, down the middle, or
no,
approximately?
So, yeah, our income is about a 40-60 ratio. I basically just pay 60% of the rent. She pays 40% of the rent. And perfect. Then we split utilities and grocery, or utilities right down the middle. I'll throw a little extra in every month in case you want some fun spending groceries. Cause that helps with eating out. You know, if you have like a fun little frozen meal at home, you know, like you can make a little date night out of that. Yeah. No, like we both grew up frugal. And so we know how to hack that a little bit. Yeah.
That's fantastic. But yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think for the cost of living, for the joint income for the household, it seems like a comfortable spot to be in.
Yeah.
So, okay. So break it down the rest of it for me, because relative to what you're bringing in, those fixed expenses, the utilities, housing seem pretty low, pretty comfortable.
Absolutely. No,
then
I'm lucky.
How are you handling? Yeah, it's fantastic. How are you handling the debt repayment versus the fund spending?
Yeah. So my forward, again, I've paid everything in the past from like $1,200 a month towards debt to like $500 a month. And like, in the past, I've had to remind myself, Celine, $500 is still a lot to be paying towards debt. Like, you are chipping away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Considering the amount of debt I have, it still takes a significant amount out. But right now, what I'm working at is about $792 a month towards debt. And I've worked out basically another spreadsheet tracking, and that should put me at paying it off July of next year. So basically a year from now, which would be awesome. Yeah. And then, so my emergency savings, right now I have about like $500 in my emergency savings, which I know is kind of low. And I know I've heard you speak on the podcast about like that emergency savings is definitely important. But with some others, you know, like paying down debt and everything, I'm putting about $180 a month in for savings.
Perfect.
And then spending, I'm spending about $250 a month. And I just kind of qualify that as like a weekly spending amount, you know? So if that it's a if it's a 5 week month, I'll, you know, that's like about $50. If it's a 4 week month, which obviously most of them are, you know, I get that little bit extra to play with, maybe an extra drink at Starbucks or something like that, which definitely helps. and then beyond that, so this is kind of interesting, and I've never heard of anyone sort of doing it this way, but along the line of my compiled spreadsheets, I have an annual expenses spreadsheet. And so on this spreadsheet, I try to think of every single thing that could come up, you know, weddings, because I'm of that age where I'm invited to
five
weddings
a year. You're in the age
where you're
getting in. Yeah.
Especially
all
in the South,
at
if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Yes. And so it'll be weddings. I have
They're
a lump
expensive.
Fund. They are. No, they are. I have a lump fund for my car maintenance, my medical expenses, like a checkup or those sorts of things. And, you know, as I realize something, I'll add it and I'll change accordingly. But right now I'm putting about $540 a month away into that. So that's, and that's not just practical things. It can be Christmas presents. It can be, I know my partner has we try to do a birthday trip every year in December. So put money away for that, you know?
Yep.
So I really
no, I
have
think that's
liked
a good
that
idea.
A lot.
I do think that you're in a unique, especially in the South. I think it starts a little later up north for the wedding thing. And then it can be quite expensive if you're asked to be in a wedding.
Absolutely.
Been there, done that. Yeah, I know. I feel like the amount of money I spent in my 20s on bridesmaid dresses and bachelorette parties.
Yeah.
That were like all different locations and destination weddings. Yeah, it's expensive.
It is.
It's fun if you have other friends going, because then it's like a mini vacation. But yes, that is an expensive, unique area to be in your 20s when you have like all these weddings to go to. Like 5 weddings is a ton of weddings.
It is. Yeah. The last year was crazy. It was like back to back to back. I was in 2 weddings. I went to like 4 or 5. It was a lot. Okay. So my last
so much.
My last few expenses. So gas, I spend about $180. I have a Corolla, so love her. She's great.
I love the Corolla. I had a Corolla for a long time. Great car.
Yes. My dad was able to score that for me before I got back from the Air Force Academy in March of 2021, before the used car market just went to absolute garbage.
Went crazy.
And I got a 2009 Corolla with 90,000 miles on it for $7,000.
Great. And they're good cars. They just keep going.
I have put almost 100,000 miles on that car in 3 years because I was doing like Instacart, DoorDash, those sorts of things to get me by in school. And I was in a long distance relationship for 2 years. So that'll do it.
Yep. That'll rack in the miles.
So yeah, gas, it used to be like $400 a month, and now we're down to $180, which is great. And then I sort of have a couple other small expenses. So I allot myself about $162 for weekend trips, because I've found that my partner and I, we rarely like to travel. And so once a month we try to do, you know, like a little trip to Asheville, North Carolina, or, you know, even to Columbia to visit friends, but I know I'm going to be spending some more money. So I want to have that extra spending money there, and I can kind of just divvy that out how I wish.
I have to tell you that I very much appreciate that you count every dollar, which I don't,
absolutely,
if you listen to the podcast, you know, I normally just do even numbers. So I really love that you're using $2 here and $2 there, that you like really have accounted
everything. I know exactly what I'm over. It's like, okay, I'm $7 over. I need to pull that from another category and make that sacrifice, you know? And then beyond that, it's $126 for car insurance, which I'm lucky to still be on my family plan's insurance.
I would say that's affordable.
So I do $108 towards long distance travel, because again, my partner and I, we like, and I consider that, you know, cross state travel, or my partner and I are going to France in November. I booked the flight pretty much for free on with points, and then 3 hotels with points.
Amazing.
So the trip total for like 9 days for both of us is probably going to be like $3,000 to $4,000 total. So
that's fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah. And then I have $72 that I put towards giving, just towards like nonprofit. My partner works for a nonprofit, so I like to give to that nonprofit. And then I have $35 a month, which is my copay for therapy. Luckily, my therapist broke up with me recently, so it's basically whenever I want to. Yeah, but it's like, it was a Cameron. I think that you can kind of come back when you need to, you know? And so
like, you don't need to do it on such a regular
And so I
occurrence.
Basically allow
so
myself.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. It made me feel good about my mental health. That's for sure. But yeah, about $35 a month, because if I need a therapy session, you know, there's some big life changes that I feel like I always have those life changes, and they happen all the time in your 20s. So I want that flex money there to be able to pull from that.
Yeah.
And if I don't use it, that just goes towards savings or paying off some more debt or spending. Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, sorry,
so you really have
list.
It. No, that's okay. You have it very allocated, like to the dollar, which we often don't see. We normally see like 200, 300, you know, pretty round numbers, which is also fine.
Right.
I like the idea, given your age, of just being done with the debt. And that's a personal decision. If you heard on the podcast, like, some people really don't feel comfortable with that. Some people really just want to be done with it. I'm of the mindset of like, I'd almost rather go a little bit harder for a year and be done than like have it take 3. Because then once that happens, your budget really frees up pretty significantly with an extra $792.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit. It's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from Whole Foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/futurerich. That's drinkag1.com/futurerich. Check it out.
My partner and I, yeah, we've been together for a long time now. So, you know, even if the wedding isn't anytime soon, like I want to start saving for that because unfortunately, you know, I don't think our families will necessarily be giving that much, if anything. And so completely doing that out of pocket is... it's a whole thing. And I've already researched, you know, like there are really cool ways you can go about it. Like there's this Airbnb I found in North Carolina that you can rent an entire like glamping campsite, have the ceremony there, like and everything. Yeah. And it's like $4,000 for the whole weekend, you know, and that cuts out like so much of the cost.
There are definitely ways to do it affordably. I don't subscribe to... I had a friend tell me once, you can't do a wedding for $10,000. I was like, I just don't believe that. yeah, I was like, but yeah, depends what you want. But I think that you can do a really nice wedding and I think you can do it within your budget. But I agree that it makes it way easier if you plan in advance and set a budget and get creative. Like I think the Airbnb is a great idea. I've gone to weddings that have been hosted at Airbnbs. It's really fun.
And it's a great idea.
And unique. Yeah. One thing that we had looked at, we ended up not doing it, is we had looked at renting like a campsite, like a kids camp off season. Which is like a similar concept.
I will have to keep
that because they're empty, you know? So once the kids go back to school, that campsite is empty. Exactly. It's a little more rustic, obviously, but it's kind of fun because they usually have like all the activities you'd want to. Well, I like all those activities.
Yeah.
It depends on who you are.
If you don't want to come, you don't have to.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that if you're willing to be creative, and I think it's more fun if it's creative and kind of more of a tribute to who you and your partner are, I think you can do it within a budget that you set, especially with advanced planning.
100%.
So
I agree.
I think it's a great idea. So you could then repurpose some of the money that was going towards debt. I would obviously love to see you do some towards the emergency fund, but then it could also be a wedding fund too.
Right. Of course. Yeah. I know. Once I pay off that debt, especially, which in the past, my emergency fund has fully been, I was using it for car maintenance. I was using it for medical expenses. Okay. So I'm really, really grateful to be in a financial position where I can have an annual expenses allocation. And it's, if I don't use that money, great. That goes towards that wedding savings or the emergency fund, like you were saying. I really try to be, when I have extra money in my budget, I try to be purposeful as to where I want to allocate it.
Perfect. And I think the savings amount for your retirement is great. You have a very good match if you're doing 200 and they're doing 175. It's a good number monthly of 375 going in. And I think what you do, I want to talk a little bit about the career because that was in your submission about what you're thinking career-wise. Yes. But for the current situation, when you get a raise, I think a really easy way to do it is I always suggest like splitting it with yourself. So if you were to get a 4% raise or a 3% raise, increasing the retirement, so you get half today, half for later.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Don't feel it as much.
I mean, part of that, my plan, essentially, I very much for a few months was hardcore going, you know, the FI life kind of approach.
Yeah.
And I wanted, you know, I wanted to be like done working at age 40. I was like, working a blue collar job, I'm sure that didn't help with that sort of mentality. You know, my bones already feel like they're getting old and I'm not even a quarter of a century old. So that'll definitely affect that mentality for sure. But, you know, that extra 800 after I pay off that debt, I want to put, you know, an extra 100 or 200 towards the emergency fund. I want to do a 10% 401k contribution and then add some more into my Roth, you know, if I'm in the financial position. Because I know, and I've done enough research to know that I'm very lucky at my age to even be able to invest anything because of compound interest. Like I understand how valuable it is.
It's huge.
A lot of people my age absolutely do not.
No, or they're in a position where compounding interest is working against them, you know, which is unfortunate, where they have because of the debt. And so it's like really hard to flip that scenario because you have to be so focused on paying off the debt, which there's only so many dollars to go around, especially in the beginning of your career, right? And as you brought up, it's a really fun time in life to be in your 20s, but it also means there's like a lot of life events happening, right? You have other people who are going to be graduating, people getting married, and people are moving, right? There's a lot of figuring out in your 20s. And
it's
so you're trying to spread all those dollars amongst everything. But no, I think from a compounding of interest standpoint, starting at your age, which I also started saving for retirement at 22, just barely 22.
Yeah, I was 22 as well when I started.
It's amazing.
It's
now great. I'm going to be 40 this year, which is comes real fast, by the way.
Congratulations.
So,
that's incredible.
Thank you. I made it. No, but I think I survived. So that the money's in your 20s, you don't have to put a lot away, right? It's just about participating because of the compounding of interest effect. And really between now and 30, I would strive to keep increasing it, but not be stressed about it, right? I wouldn't stress about it. You're already contributing. You have a good match. But the more you can do before you're 30, it's shocking how much the time effect happens. Like,
The rule of 72, I am aware.
Yep. My favorite rule.
It's such a good rule.
One of the,
if it's
I
in
think
your
it's,
favor.
Yeah, it's if it works for you, it's so incredibly powerful. And you're right. You're correct that most people are not in the position or not don't understand it yet about the benefit of starting really young. And unfortunately, it's almost impossible to catch up. So if you had a twin and she started at 32, it's almost impossible to catch you.
Yeah, and I think on that note of increasing without stressing myself out in terms of, you know, contributions to my 401k Roth, all of that, I love numbers. I love running and crunching the numbers. So I have another spreadsheet that when I was in that FI mindset, I basically did side by side what it would look like for my budget to put 10% towards my 401k, 15, 18, and basically just went up all the way, you know, to like 25 to 30%. And then I did, you know, some added Roth on top of that. And it was super interesting because I took all of that and I ran it on an interest, a compound interest calculator, and I saw how different the results would be and put that in my spreadsheet. And so the, I don't know if this is the golden number, but for my salary and all of that, if I was okay with being a little bit more aggressive, I figured out that 18% in my 401k would be like, it would set me up to be golden basically by the time I'm 40.
Yeah. I mean, 18% from 23 on is a big number.
Yeah.
Especially with the match. But there's always a trade in life, right? Doesn't always a trade off in life. Everything is a seesaw. So to do 18%, especially pre-tax, you feel it a bit less, as you know, there is a trade, right? There will be less money for other parts of your life. And so I think where you're at is really good. I think you can continue to increase it. The fact that you understand the compounding of interest is really the most powerful piece of everything, honestly, because when you get a raise or you have excess money, you'll know to increase it. And so there is the aspect of you will never have your 20s back again.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen,
I mean, that was part of my decision with leaving the Air Force Academy. I probably would have become a C-17 pilot and traveled the world, you know, and done all of those cool stuff. But as we keep talking about the trade-offs, for me at that time, I understood on a fundamental level, and I think this is with me, you know, being an immigrant, I'm from South Africa, like I moved here when I was about 6 years old, that my autonomy means everything to me. And as cool as a career in the military can be, you lose that autonomy as soon as you sign your name on that line. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't, I was lucky that I could back out because I know, you know, if you enlist, it's like, all right, 6 years, there we go, or four years, you know? And so I would have had a lot less flexibility in that sense, but this was a traditional 4-year program. It was just under the military academy, you know, category. And so I was just lucky that I could say, you know what, I gave it the full 2 years basically before commitment, and this is not for me.
Yeah, so I think it's the same situation kind of now with your 20s, which is I think you're doing a good job paying down debt and also contributing to the 401k, and you still have enough bandwidth to enjoy yourself, right?
Yes.
So as much as the spreadsheet's super attractive, if you just did 18%, you will give up a social life, right? Like you will not be able to do the weekend trip or participate in weddings. So you will be saying no to other things because you said yes to that. And that's okay, right? Everyone has to pick, you know, what works for them. But I think knowing that you're starting so young and that you have a lot of upward mobility, you can increase down the line. I think doing something more in the middle than extreme, right, is probably better.
And that's why I took a step back. And that's why I honestly took the percentage-based approach to be like, okay, this is the percentage of my paycheck that absolutely has to go towards bills, utilities, gas, etc. But now I'm in more control. I have more control to decide, okay, at this point in my life, because this I started this whole percentage program, we'll call it, a couple, you know, like literally 3 or 4 months ago. And I've changed it every single month to adjust for my lifestyle at that moment. And I've kept true to the basic percentages. You know, I've flexed a bit more in certain areas. Honestly, I have flexed more in, you know, the spending and those sorts of things to go lower because I was at that point where I felt like, okay, I can comfortably say that I can spend and stick to $50 a week right now. But if there's a certain month in my life, because I'm in my 20s, or I know that that's a heavy wedding month for some reason, people love it. I can basically
June,
know
probably.
That. Yes, literally. Luckily, I've avoided any June weddings. I was invited to a May one and I respectfully declined because we had been traveling for like 6 weekends in a row and I did not know the person well enough that I felt like they would miss me necessarily. So I said, thank you for the invite, but I'm going to stay home.
Which you can always say no. They're like, you can still be, you don't always have to say yes. I think that's, there's a lot of pressure in your 20s to show up for everything and you don't have to. If it doesn't make sense financially, you can just say, thank you very much for the invite. Wish we could be there, but we can't.
And you can can Venmo them a little wedding gift if you want. You know, like you can be there.
I'd say we'd love to like go get a dinner later and celebrate privately. You know, there's ways to still be supportive without screwing up your budget. Because, yeah, there's a lot of invites when you're in your 20s. It's fun.
Absolutely.
But I love that you brought that up. okay, so let's pivot a little bit. And in your submission, you had talked about so did I answer your questions? We went through your budget, your expenses. I feel like you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Prioritizing. But then you wrote something else in your submission, which I'm assuming maybe we should chat about.
Yes. So okay. I kind of laughed about being in blue collar work, but I don't necessarily, going into it, especially because this was something that I didn't have to put that much time into, like it was a 2-year program, you know, it wasn't ridiculously long. It felt like something that I would enjoy. I did enjoy it and I do enjoy it most of the time, but I understood that it was not something that I wanted to do unless I really couldn't think of anything else for 20 to 30 to 40 years, you know, and so recently, since I, you know, have been in the field working full time for almost a year now, I think anytime that year comes around, you're always kind of like, okay, let's reanalyze. Or if you're doing it right, you are hopefully reanalyzing critically. Because I think people can easily be like, oh, I've been here for 4 years. That's crazy. And I just didn't want to get complacent like that. So I've just kind of realized, you know, we had some unfortunate things happen. My 2 months into my first full-time job in this field, our maintenance hangar burned to the ground, like literally went up in flames and there was almost nothing salvageable in the hangar. And that was tough. Being like, oh, wow, okay. Just as I was starting to get in the groove and understand the company and the literally just burned to the ground. And I just had to step back and be like, okay, this is going to be my life for the next few months, years, you know, like however long it takes to rebuild this company. And I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, any sort of aspects of city planning, airport planning, those sorts of things, but this board comes together anytime these decisions like building a hangar, because just to give you perspective, that hangar had been there for like 50 plus years. It was that old and hadn't been revisited since, pretty much. So this board comes together and everyone has to, the contractors, the people who sit on the board, that, you know, like everyone has to agree on getting this thing up. And I hear different things every single day. Right. Exactly. Probably. Exactly. Yeah, and it has to be unanimous. It has to be unanimous, and they have to be like, okay, yes, we'll move to the next step, because if the contractor is a problem, sorry, back to the drawing board. And so I've heard, you know, we'll have a new hangar up in 18 months. We'll have a new hangar up in 24 months. And then like, just for reference, they wanted to get a fuel farm, which basically allows the company to fuel their own planes, because they can just go get the truck, fill up the airplane with fuel. And I believe it had taken them like 8 years from the conception of the idea to putting the fuel farm in to get it actually built. And so that kind of
that's
gives
a
you
long
an idea.
Time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And so a little bit of instability then, or a lot of instability, basically, right?
For the past 6 months since that happened, probably, oh my gosh, like I guess 8 months at this point, that's insane. I have been dealing with just inefficiency. You know, as much as I love my CEO, he's a great guy. He's got his head in 50 different places. Mm-hmm. I basically feel like he's not doing or taking the right steps to prioritize what maintenance needs. And the charter service is what makes him easy money. Maintenance can make him money, but if we're doing maintenance on our own planes, you know, it's not always super lucrative, especially if we're doing stuff like removing cylinders or engines to send to an overhaul shop and they make the money. And then we just use the labor to put the engine back on the plane, you know, and it's relatively inexpensive. Those decisions are affecting how I am able to do my job. And it gets to me on a daily basis, you know. Just for example, we have to pull an engine from a plane to send to overhaul. And we told the CEO, okay, we need an engine stand that is X amount of inches tall. Okay, cool. Okay. The stand comes in, it's the wrong height. And we tell him it's the wrong height. And it's basically just like, okay, build it anyways and see what happens. And these decisions kind of compound. And, you know, like those sorts of things, that is what makes me think, okay, is this the industry? Is this company? You know, so I feel like before I make a career pivot, if I'm interested in doing that, which I am, I feel like I need to experience life somewhere else, right? Like working somewhere else to see, okay, is it more organized here? Does that make me enjoy the job more? Like all of these different aspects that you really have to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it sounds like it's a smaller to mid-sized company. Is that correct?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. So I do think from personal experience, smaller to mid-sized can be a little bit more disorganized and less efficient than a larger corporation where there's pros and cons, right? There's more structure, more efficiencies, potentially more layers of management. So that could always slow things down depending on the role, on approval processes. So I think it's smart though to try. I think what's important about your 20s is to try things out, right? And find what you like and don't like. So,
yeah, exactly.
So you're thinking about switching.
Right. So if I actually have applied to and technically interviewed at a different company. I'm waiting to hear back. It's been about 2 weeks now, but some of the people I know who work there say that it's been kind of slow. So that might be impacting their decision for hiring new people. But I'm also not wanting to necessarily take that new job if, you know, conditions maybe will improve at this job, or if I can get a raise, you know, like those sorts of things. Because I jumped jobs in my schooling era so many times.
Okay.
And that just leads to burnout, I feel like, you know, when you when you're like, oh,
learning
I don't
people,
like it.
New management.
Right, exactly. And so if I don't stay in the field, though, as I mentioned in the submission, I really, really enjoy finance in general and everything, personal finance specifically, but I'm always interested in learning anything that I can about investing, about, you know, building your budget, about like the emotional aspects that affect how people use their money. And like, it's just fascinating to me. You know, when I think about something I could get passionate about, it's that. And I've done a ton of research into, you know, doing something like becoming a CFP or becoming a CPA. You know, like I always enjoyed even accounting in school. And I know Southern New Hampshire University, they have a ton of programs. They even have a finance program that has a CFP focus that basically lets you sit to take the exam. And I've heard some people say, you know, like you should probably take a couple extra courses to feel as prepared as you should be. But I also know it's not a decision I want to make lightly, because I know how much goes into becoming a CFP. I know if you pass the test, that doesn't mean you're a CFP. You still have the years afterwards that you have to accrue hours and all of that. So I don't want to make that decision lightly. If I make it, you know what I mean?
Hello, and thank you for listening to today's episode. I wanted to let you know that my conversation with Cameron is a two-part series. So today on July 12th, we are airing part one of the conversation. And then next Friday on July 19th will be the second part of my conversation with Cameron. I hope you enjoy the conversation, and if you enjoy the podcast, we would super appreciate it if you could subscribe and share with a friend. Thank you and enjoy. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.